This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hey, what's this sticker on the gas pump? Me? You mean me? Cigarettes kill millions, and we warn users right on the pack. Burning gasoline kills the future. In Canada, Robert Shirky left his law practice to put us right into the climate changer driver's seat. Robert, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me on the program, Alex.
Okay, what do these climate labels on gas pumps look like?
Well, they are evocative of the tobacco warning labels. So often right now when you go gas up, there will be a 3-inch by 3-inch square on your gas pump that has an advertisement, maybe for a points program or come in and get your coffee. We're thinking on that space instead, why not have a climate change, call it a warning label, information label, or risk disclosure label, where the top half of it has an image that communicates an impact of climate change, and the lower half has some text. So some example text might read, you know, caution use of this fuel product contributes to climate change, which may cause blank. And perhaps you want to highlight ocean acidification or extreme weather or what have you. And then, of course, there'd be a little link to a website on it where that will be a resource for all the different things that an individual can do to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions footprint.
Is this happening anywhere in the world?
It is. It's actually exciting. I've been advocating for it across Canada at the local level, so asking cities and towns to pass this into law required of gasoline retailers. Across Canada, we've had councils from coast to coast endorse the concept and call on other orders of government to implement it. And that, of course, gives us great leverage in our conversation with the province and the federal government. But it was in late 2015 that the city of North Vancouver in British Columbia became the first municipality in the world to actually pass it into law. Shortly after that, two more communities came on board on the West Coast and more expect in 2016. And these were global firsts. It was in all sorts of media around the world, and we got lots of interest from around the world. And so our game plan is we actually have volunteers across the country that are harvesting email addresses of politicians from all around the world from government websites. And in the next few weeks, we're going to send this concept and say, hey, here's this idea. It's low cost. Here's why we think it's compelling. And it's happening here in Canada. You should pursue this in your jurisdiction.
Do you have any interest in the United States?
We've been working with a few groups in San Francisco, Berkeley, Santa Monica, and Seattle. And there's a few members of different environmental groups there that, through our guidance, have been advocating for it. And they've been able to have some success, but there's a bit of a delay because there's a case on cell phone labels that's working its way through the courts, and counselors in those communities want to see the outcome of that case before passing this thing into law. So I think you'll see more action in the United States probably in the summertime after some legal questions are then resolved.
You know, I don't think about it. I drive my car up to the pump. I grab it and fill it up. Are you trying to make me feel guilty, or what's the idea here?
Yeah, well, that's not it. It's a simple intervention. All it really does is it communicates hidden costs or externalities to end users. Much in the same way, actually, I mean, you could say that pricing mechanisms, you know, like a carbon tax or a cap and trade regime, seek to capture and convey those harms, you know, via that quantitative approach to the end user. What this does is it uses a qualitative approach, so image and text, to capture and communicate these hidden costs of fossil fuels to the end user. And the idea is if you can disclose risk further downstream, that's what actually drives change upstream. So on the demand side of the equation, we have a habitual automatic behavior that's just part of the everyday fabric of living, and it's been normalized for a couple of generations. We don't even think twice about it. And if that's what you have, if that's the situation downstream, it's sort of the perfect downstream environment to almost perpetuate the status quo. And we tend to distance ourselves from the problem, so we'll point upstream, we'll say, well, it's a problem of pipelines and oil sands and offshore drilling and shipping and so on. And I think you will see some wins in that approach. But if at the end of the day, if we're not addressing the demand side of the equation, if we're not causing broader dissatisfaction with that status quo solution, it's going to be really hard to sort of transition away from fossil fuels. So all this does is it makes us feel more connected to the problem, makes it more tangible, more real, takes that faraway consequence, brings it into the here and now. And in doing so, it makes us less satisfied with the status quo. It makes us say, well, but what am I supposed to do? What are my options? And if you get, you know, if I start to say that, if you do, if our neighbors do, if an entire community does, if an entire marketplace does, you're creating this ideal social environment for reform. So all of a sudden, a politician then will have greater political capital to be able to implement climate-friendly initiatives, you know, A, B, and C. And you'll see as well, I think, auto manufacturers be incentivized to deliver alternate solutions to meet this shifted demand. So it's a simple, low-cost intervention to make the problem more real. And I think that's a necessary first step to then more meaningful reforms.
How does the amount of emissions that actually come from us, the consumers, relate to things like the tar sands and the pipeline projects?
Well, interestingly, it's actually the vast majority of emissions that come from end use. So it depends on how carbon intense your fuel choice is. So say if you get something from the oil sands, it's going to be about 30% of emissions come from extraction, processing, and moving the product. If it's a light crude, then you're looking at something like 20% of emissions might come from upstream sources. But really, at the end of the day, it's not, when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, it's not, you know, taking the stuff out of the earth. It's not then refining it or shipping it to a point of consumption. It's when you and I combust the product, when we burn it in our vehicles, that's actually where the vast majority of emissions come from. And separate and apart from that, I mean, if we do transition away from the internal combustion engine, then that drives so much change upstream, because I like to think, and a lot of economists would agree with this, that the value of a commodity is derived from its uses. So it's critical to ask that question, well, how do we use the product? It's critical to look at uses, because if you address that aspect, then you drive all sorts of change upstream.
Robert Cherkey, I have to ask on a personal level, how could you give up a career in law to become a climate activist? That's never going to pay very well. Take it from me.
Well, I realized it doesn't pay very well at all. I think I understood the urgency and the gravity of the problem, and I wasn't all that happy practicing law. It wasn't as fulfilling as, you know, I might have hoped it to have been. And I was concerned about this problem. And it was actually my grandfather who, before he passed away, his last words to me were to do what you love. And I recall being at his funeral in Saskatchewan and standing over top of his grave, and my father, you know, beside him, who had passed away a few years prior. And next to that was this empty patch of green grass. And there I was staring down at that, you know, with those words echoing through my head, do what you love. And I realized that, hey, you know, I'm kind of staring down mortality. We all are. And I started to ask myself some of the bigger questions and, you know, what do I do with the time left? So I've always had a few interesting ideas for campaigns. This was one. I just eventually sort of plucked it off the back burner and transitioned to this work. And while I'm certainly, you know, racking up debt, I can't say it is more meaningful. And we're optimistic, actually. It's tough fundraising in Canada if you lack charitable status. And given the nature of my political advocacy, I can't get charitable status. But our hope is that if we get lucky, if we get one philanthropist that says, hey, you know what, you guys are creating Global First. You've got a game plan to get this all around the world. I want to support this. I value impact, say, more than I do a tax receipt. I think that 2016 might be the year we get a bit of a break. And hopefully then I'll slowly work my way back out of debt. In the meantime, the party's on Visa and MasterCard.
Oh, Robert, we do need more like you. Now tell us how people can find out more and get this gas pump label into our own community.
Well, I'd encourage everyone listening to visit ourhorizon.org. That's www.our, like yours and mine, horizon.org. And from there, there's all sorts of resources. There's a TEDx talk, there's longer lectures, there's pre-written emails that you can send to your counselors. Easy thing to do is just take a moment to go there, learn about it, and then write your representatives. The other thing, too, if you are able to support the campaign financially, we've got a crowdfund where even a dollar or two or $5 a month, you know, over a lot of people actually does go a long way. And with that, I can have, I'm looking to hopefully hire my first staff person to do a lot of the work. So, yeah, so two ways to help: advocate for it. One, and if you're able to contribute, and if by chance, if there is a billionaire listening to this broadcast, you know, call me. It would be amazing to have some support. So thank you.
I wonder if we do have any billionaire listeners. We might. Okay, folks, try this out. Ourhorizon.org. You can do it. Get your local government to require climate warning labels on gas pumps. I'm Alex Smith reporting. Get all our past programs as free MP3 files at ecoshock.org. Check out my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. And tell your friends about the Radio EcoShock page on SoundCloud. I'm Alex. Thank you for listening and caring about your world.